Hello and welcome to Out There Wrestling. My name is Jensen Ryan, and in this show, we're going to take a look back at one of the most iconic eras of wrestling today. Yes, we're talking about the Attitude Era. Whether you thought it was too edgy, not edgy enough, or whether you're still reminiscing, hoping the world of wrestling's like it today. You can't escape one of the most iconic eras ever. Let's take a look back at the Attitude Era. If you're a fan of wrestling in the 1990s, you can't escape the explosion that wrestling took in terms of popularity towards the late 1990s. It was a time when things really started to change in the landscape with thanks to WCW. Yes, WCW took the dive of getting their flagship show Nitro on TNT in front of a huge audience, but with a difference. They wanted edgier stuff. They wanted things that would attract adults to the show, as they started to bring in a new era of wrestling that was never seen before, with adult content and so much more. Meanwhile, on the other side of things, the World Wrestling Federation, now known as WWE, were struggling with ratings. And Raw, which was recorded, was very different to WCW Nitro, which was broadcast live. And I'm sure many of us remember the iconic moment where Tony Schiavone revealed live on Nitro that Mick Foley was going to win the WWF Championship over on Raw. Actually, that was a moment in time famous because of the backlash, which actually resulted in people tuning over to Raw to see that iconic moment. But the Attitude Era really took off in 1997. The WWF knew they needed to do something different to encapsulate the audience, and so the Attitude Era was born. I think many of us probably remember the advert, which was filmed at WWE headquarters, known as Titan Towers back in those days, which saw some famous wrestlers around the office really promoting the fact that he wanted this new era. That was backed, of course, by the chairman Vince McMahon appearing on Raw to usher in this new attitude. Now, this new attitude led to an increase in the amount of people who were interested in wrestling for the first time, because it appealed more to adults. And I think one of the pioneers of this happening, you might argue, was maybe Brian Pillman's loose cannon gimmick, which was really out there and I think kind of brought that adult content to life. But also the WWF capitalised on one of his most famous moments in the Survivor Series, which saw Bret the Hitman Hart face Shawn Michaels. And I'm sure, as many of us know, it was Bret Hart's last match in the World Wrestling Federation before he was due to defect to WCW. But as the story is told, Bret Hitman Hart was the champion and allegedly didn't want to lose. So backstage, McMahon plotted a plan that would see him win and then give up the title. But that was far from the events that took place at the time. They managed to convince Bret Hart to allow Shawn Michaels to put him in a sharpshooter. And as that happened, it would be reversed to let Bret Hart apply the sharpshooter. But as history says, that didn't happen, because when Shawn Michaels applied the sharpshooter, the bell was rung, making Shawn Michaels the brand new WWF Championship. And I'm sure that many of us remember what happened after that, which saw a little bit of an altercation at the arena and then backstage as well, leading to Vince McMahon getting a black eye. The following night, he appeared on Raw and appeared to blame Bret Hart for everything that went down. And that, to some people, arguably, was the beginning of this new era. Whilst for many, that may be the beginning of the Attitude Era, we're now going to focus on another potential beginning of it. For many years, WWF owner Vince McMahon sat behind the commentary desk delivering some interesting commentary. For many, they didn't know that he was actually the owner. In fact, if you remember rightly, we even had presidents like Jack Tunney and Gorilla Monsoon, who played the part of the authority figures throughout different durations of the WWF in the 90s. But that was all to change in the late 90s when Vince McMahon stepped up claiming that Stone Cold Steve Austin, who I think we all can all agree, one of the legends of the Attitude Era, stepped up and tried to wrestle despite the fact he wasn't medically cleared. It was the first time for many that Vince McMahon had made himself known as the owner of the World Wrestling Federation. But this was to start one of the biggest rivalries in wrestling history. McMahon versus Austin. And I have to say, I absolutely loved it. And in this little altercation, Vince attempted, as an online story of course, to stop Stone Cold from wrestling and being active due to his injury, which resulted in McMahon receiving the first of many Stone Cold stunners. But the story went on from there. For a few years, we would see Stone Cold go back and forth with the owner, Vince McMahon, probably doing what many people wanted to do, taking out on their boss. And the rivalry really, really heated up. But it brought in the audiences. People stopped watching WCW, which for many weeks had dominated the charts. I think we're talking, I can't remember what it was now, it was a high figure, like 83 or something like that, weeks. The WCW won the ratings battle with WCW Nitro. Over on Raw, things were really starting to change. Stone Cold was moving away from that ringmaster gimmick and really started to be the person he wanted to be, Stone Cold Steve Austin. But it wasn't just McMahon versus Austin that made this era iconic. We'll go back to their story in a minute. We'll move now to some of the edgier content. Let's talk about D-Generation X. A group of outlaws, which actually included the New Age Outlaws as a tag team, and included, well, originally led by Shawn Michaels, of course, until his injury, until Triple H kind of took over a little bit. But we had people like China, we had X-Pac, Billy Gunn, Road Dogg, who were all part of this faction, which, if you remember, actually went down to WCW. This is the first time, really, they kind of really recognised the competition. They went down to WCW with a tank and pretended to try and invade an episode of Nitro, which I think fans absolutely adored because the program was called Raw is War for a good reason, because it was part of the Monday Night Wars between Nitro and Raw, which is really the reason why this Attitude Era really stemmed. But D-Generation X did some probably debatable things, including a lot of comments which were, let's say, adult, and a lot of actions that were also adult and of a sexual nature. Many of which, of course, upset television networks and were actually cut out of some international broadcasts. I think we all know probably the one I'm referring to, where Shawn Michaels was on the floor doing a action. If you don't know, Google it. And it was iconic for the wrong reasons. And there were, you know, dressing up as other characters of the Nation of Domination, one of the other key factions of the Attitude Era. Those two factions would go to war on many occasions, and in itself, the Nation of Domination had its own little war internally. If you remember, they ousted the leader in favour of one of the most famous actors in the world now, The Rock. The Rock was another person who would prosper from the Attitude Era as the leader of the Nation of Domination, which included some great talent, people like Mark Henry, D'Lo Brown, to name a few. DX would do something rather risque when they dressed up as a Nation of Domination in a sketch which was to mock the faction, which was a move that nowadays would be very unpopular. At the time, of course, things were very different. And the two factions would go to war on many occasions. Triple H was really starting to get himself out there as a potential main event carder in the wrestling world. And some of the other people in it, you know, if you talk about the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn, the New Age Outlaws, I mean, they won the Tag Team Championship on many occasions. I want to talk about, you know, the fantastic match they had with you know, Terry Funk, for example, and Cactus Jack, which was the dumpster match. If you haven't seen it, it's worth checking out. A really good match, and at a time when just people were loving this whole hardcore thing. And when you talk about attitude, that's one area you can't forget, is the hardcore nature of it. Let's go back to early 90s, 80s, where wrestling was very much villain, or heel as we call it, versus babyface. Yeah, sometimes they might do babyface versus babyface. Hogan and Ultimate Warrior, for example. But things were very placid, and there wasn't really, I mean, you might get a few instances like Macho Man being bitten by Jake the Snake, for example. But more often than not, it would be quite a placid approach to wrestling, with clean wins on most occasions, and just none of that kind of a hardcore element. But that would change with the introduction of the third party to the Monday Night Wars. They technically might not have been on a Monday, but they were still part of it. This time was thanks to Paul Heyman, a name you'll be very familiar with in WWE at the moment. Paul Heyman had started to work with a company called Eastern Championship Wrestling, otherwise known as ECW. The promotion was doing pretty well for itself, it was getting a good audience behind it, but Paul Heyman wanted to make a huge change which would heavily impact the late 90s, early 2000s. He renamed Eastern Championship Wrestling Extreme Championship Wrestling. You can't ignore the Attitude Era without talking about ECW, which took some of his inspiration from some of the promotions in Japan, in fact. We talk about like barbed wire matches, for example. Yes, they had barbed wire matches, and this time they replaced the ropes with barbed wire. I can only imagine how painful that must have been to do as a thing. We saw a real hardcore element. I mean, the filming wasn't particularly brilliant. It was quite edgy. It was allowing people to swear on TV. In fact, it was even using, allegedly, copyrighted music without having permission to do so from people like Metallica. They didn't care. Paul Heyman was going for it. And it kind of got a bit of a cult following and still probably does to this day. Because what they were doing is, they were looking at other promotions going, hey, look, this looks good, but what about if we integrate wrestling with this new hardcore element, which would introduce things like blood and all sorts of other things. If you want to check back on some of the interesting moments they had, which include the wrestling ring being bombarded with the audience's chairs, would like to be in the ring at that point, it really was something that was starting to get noticed. For a while, it was quite a small promotion, so fairly unrecognised, but as people started to turn their heads towards this new hardcore outfit, it really started to build momentum, and that was more noticeable when the World Wrestling Federation did an episode of Raw in the home of ECW, which resulted in the audience chanting ECW. At the time, although Vince McMahon, I'm sure, knew who ECW was, he kind of played blind to it, and on air said, who are ECW? And they didn't know exactly who it was. But this would start an invasion storyline, which was the ECW invade Monday Night Raw. And we're talking kind of early on, really, before into this whole Attitude Era, really, before it was even official. And they jumped in. And for a lot of World Wrestling Federation wrestlers, the audience had no idea who ECW was. But if ECW, they were kind of standing their ground, and this is our arena kind of thing. So it was a momentum occasion which started to see two companies cross over for the first time. However, ECW was still maintaining itself as a small company. But it did get quite good deals with companies like TNN, for example, in America. and many others. Some of the more credible ones you remember from the times at ECW were, you know, of course, Mick Foley spent quite a bit of time there. Lance Storm, even Chris Jericho was there at one point. Taz, of course, who's on AEW today, was the ECW champion. Sabu, who could forget Sabu? The Sandman, in a strange move where they would allow him to drink alcohol and smoke on his way to the ring. You wouldn't see that these days, would you, of course? And you would never see that in WWE. But that's what it was really like down at ECW. But this new idea of hardcore wrestling with barbed wire and, you know, the use of weapons and blood, all that kind of stuff, started to make WWF think a bit differently. They started to think, actually, is that something we should be doing to get the audience in? And so they made the move when introducing the Attitude Era to allow things like being hit with chairs across the head, which, you know, is very much a debated subject nowadays and very much something you can't do in most cases. I'm sure it does still happen, of course it does. You know, things like Hell in a Cell, for example, which was introduced as well. So WWE wanted to piece that hardcore element and they wanted to integrate it into their product. And as I mentioned just now, that was behind the creation of one of the most interesting structures to date. Hell in a Cell. The first match would pit Shawn Michaels against the Phenom, The Undertaker. Now, if you saw that match at Bad Blood, you'll remember that it was the introduction of Kane, who would come down, rip the door off, and basically cost his brother, The Undertaker, the match. In itself, the idea of Kane, to many, was quite scary. You know, a man with a mask who was allegedly burnt in a fire that The Undertaker caused. You know, even those kind of stories you just wouldn't have got, you know, in the 1990s as such. We were used to The Undertaker getting thrown in caskets by Yokozuna and 20 other guys and not returning for several months. And then, you know, Leslie Nielsen doing an investigation about where The Undertaker is and the fake Undertaker and so much more. But this was a very different product back in the late 90s. That was another great rivalry between The Undertaker and his said half-brother, Kane, who alleged he was burnt when The Undertaker killed his parents. What an awful storyline that must have been for anybody related to The Undertaker. And in a strange, bizarre twist, we heard that Paul Bearer was the father of Kane. I mean, you've got to use your imagination a little bit here. As great as Paul Bearer was, him being the father of Kane, can't quite see it myself, but Paul Bearer would side with Kane, obviously, because he did it with Mankind a few years earlier against Undertaker. And this would put The Undertaker versus Kane on many occasions, leading to WrestleMania 14, where Undertaker, who'd previously refused to go against his own brother, would eventually give in and do exactly that. It took three tombstones to put away Kane, with Undertaker getting the win. But that wasn't the first time the two would battle, because in another new idea, the Inferno match. In a bid to get one over on its competition, WCW and ECW, in the late 90s, the WWF would go out there to bring in fresh new ideas to gain a bigger audience share. One of the biggest rivalries, which pitted The Undertaker against Kane, well, this would see the introduction of a different type of match, the Inferno match. Now, I don't know if anybody remembers this, but one thing I do know about it is, and I've not been in one myself, is that it must have been hugely hot doing that match, because what would happen was, around the apron of the ring, there would be flames throughout the whole match. When a big impact happened or a big bump happened in the ring, the flames would rise to in response to it. The idea being to set your opponent alight. The Undertaker versus Kane would be the first match of this variety. I can't remember which one it was now, but I do remember that there was a teddy bear involved at one point, but there you go. Being burned, but that's a different matter. how they won was quite interesting because Kane was out of the ring. Undertaker managed to dive over the top of the flames. Imagine how that was. And they managed to accidentally divert a move which would see Kane set himself alight. Yeah, it was his, I can't remember his leg or arm now back in the day. I was thinking about it a bit. They had a couple of these matches. I can't imagine you'd get many of those these days in WWE or any of the tool for that matter. But it was certainly a different type of event. And it wouldn't stop there. Because then we saw the first blood match. In which The Undertaker would go against Stone Cold. The idea being the first person to bleed would lose. And we even saw allegedly the Vince McMahon apparently signed the paperwork with the blood of Stone Cold Steve Austin in his pen. What a moment that was. And so that would be a new type of match. I might have even got that wrong, the match actually, but I know it was the first blood match. It's been so many years, but of its variety and an interesting move for the company, which would see it a few times. Alright, so that's some of the moves we saw, some of the new matches we saw within the World Wrestling Federation. But there was still more to come. Next, we talk about the Hardcore Championship. The evolution of the Attitude Era didn't just extend to the main events, it actually applied to all of the cards. What we saw later on, well, fairly early on in the Attitude Era, was the idea of a brand new championship which would be defended 24/7. Now, when I say 24/7 championship these days, you automatically think of the 24/7 championship the WWE currently has. But this one was very different. It was the Hardcore Championship, which meant it could be won anywhere at any time if you had a referee. So the kind of same rules you see nowadays with a 24/7 title, but this time it was much more of a thing. And that was first presented to Mankind, or Mick Foley, by Vince McMahon, who basically presented a former design of the World Wrestling Federation Championship, all smashed up, which was the Hardcore title. But it would deliver some of the most funniest and interesting moments of the Attitude Era, because we get all sorts of people involved in it. Obviously, Mankind had it first. And yeah, people like Hardcore Holly was involved in it. And just to name a few people involved in it, we would see things like people being hit with dumpsters, even Pat Patterson and Gerald Briscoe at one point. Yeah, icons also won the Hardcore Championship, because you see people basically stab each other in the back, screw each other over, just to have a shot of winning this Hardcore Championship. But any rule went, really. And I think for the audience, they love seeing something a little bit different, you know, because the action didn't just happen inside the ring, it'd be anywhere in the building, potentially, anywhere really. And so you see a lot more of the hardcore elements backstage as everybody attempted to try and win this prestige championship. Again, it's just another way of trying to highlight the idea of hardcore. I remember there being a like an outside street match or something like that, where the poor guys who were taking part in the match, it was raining. So they were getting actually soaking wet, but they still performed their very best, which is really good. So, the Hardcore Championship really gave something different. Let's go back now to the biggest rivalry, Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Vince McMahon, which would take a bit of a turn towards the end of the Attitude Era after their amazing confrontations, which saw cage matches with the Big Show making his entrance to WWF, would see Vince McMahon wrestle for the first time, because for many years he didn't do that. He was a commentator, sat behind the desk, and really had no interest in wrestling, with thanks to his father, Vince McMahon Jr., who didn't really want him to get in the industry, but certainly didn't want him to be a wrestler if he did. So he kind of lived by that for many years, but in a bid to try and get ratings, he turned it on his head and said, look, I'm going to do a match. And I just remember that first match where Austin was against Vince McMahon, and there was just, the audience were going absolutely wild with excitement, because it was just such a great moment. And then, you know, Vincent McMahon had the Stooges and many other things that would really contribute towards it. But towards the end of the Attitude Era, we saw Vince McMahon create a faction with Shane McMahon. And we've got to talk about this, because for many weeks those two were against each other, and Shane McMahon kept referring to, and I never remember, is the higher power, the greater power. And we were going to find out who this greater power was. It was someone really important. And Vincent McMahon was like, oh, I don't know who that is, because he was scared of the greater power. And the big reveal was going to happen. And we think we can all predict what was going to happen here, which was that it was Vincent McMahon the whole time. And we saw then the corporate ministry, which was The Undertaker, Shane McMahon, Vincent McMahon. And we'll remember before this, Undertaker apparently tried to abduct, you know, Stephanie McMahon, if you remember that moment, and tried to basically, like, put her on that Undertaker sign to sacrifice her and all this kind of strange stuff. But it was a really wild time for wrestling, I'll tell you. But that led to the corporate ministry, which had a fair few good moments, you know, talking 1999. But 2000, things had changed a little bit more. The Undertaker was out for a while, and as we know a little bit later on in life, I think it was 2002-2003, we saw the Invasion storyline. That was in 2001 that kicked off, which was meant to be this really good storyline when WWF bought WCW. Unfortunately, though, contractual obligations meant that much of the big stars in WCW couldn't wrestle or didn't want to wrestle for the World Wrestling Federation, which meant they had a lot of talent which was pretty good from WCW, but didn't have the desired impact it wanted to do when they put the Invasion storyline, WCW against WWF, and later on ECW. We'll talk about it in a later show, but to summarise that, it really was an era that will never be forgotten in wrestling. Whether you liked it or you didn't like it, with the introduction of people like Val Venus, who apparently had something chopped off, or nearly, by Kai and Tai. What a moment. You know, if you remember Val Venus, he was a character which was meant to be a ladies' man, I think, and a bit more, if you know what I mean, some sort of film actor that you wouldn't normally watch, necessarily, and so much more. So it was a much edgier product which appealed to adults. But we said before, we had the Hardcore Championship, we had first blood matches, we had Hell in a Cell, we had edgy cage matches. They actually changed the structure of the cage, if you remember. And so much more. If you want to find out more about it, you should check out the WWE Network, where you can watch the documentary on the Attitude Era. Next time on the show, we'll talk the Invasion storyline, which didn't quite have the desired impact it required. That's next time on Out There Wrestling.